harder. Some days are gold, some days you bother. If I may be so bold, sometimes I feel like folding my hand and be a one-eyed man.
Stubbs, welcome to Valley FM.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Entirely our pleasure. We'd like to get to know you a little bit to start with. Can we start with how you got into the blues and your influences?
Yeah. My father is a guitarist, and when I first started playing, I was about 13 or 14. Before that, he would always have band practice and stuff at the house, and his band played blues and like early rock and roll and some classic rock, I suppose, but he really was into like Bo Diddley, Chuck Berry, B.B. King, Freddie King. So I just grew up listening to it. And when I got into guitar, I was into some other stuff like pop rock or whatever for a minute. But by the time I was 14 or 15, I was pretty much exclusively only into like vintage blues. And every year that would go by, I would go to earlier and earlier sources of that. You know what I mean?
What are you listening to these days?
These days are a little different. I mean, I listen to blues all the time, of course, but I listen to a lot of different styles at this point. I think probably about 10 years ago or 12 years ago. I mean, I had the blues blinders on my whole life, with the exception of certain bands like the Beatles and stuff like that. But probably about 10 or 12 years ago, I started making some instrumental guitar records. And when I started getting into making that, I personally don't sing, so if I wanted to make a record, I either have to hire a singer or just write my own instrumental music. And when I got into that, it kind of opened a lot of doors for me. I listened to a lot of, at that time, a lot of it, like vintage exotica music, Cuban music, psychedelic music, and obviously blues and all this stuff. And it kind of like morphed into the instrumental thing for a long time. I still do it on the side. These days, I listen to everything from old vintage blues that I've always loved, but I listen to all kinds of indie rock, psych rock, singer-songwriter, soul music. Your country seems to be producing a lot of artists I've been listening to lately.
Oh, cool.
King Gizzard, the Lizard Wizard. I like them a lot. Tame Impala, I like them a lot. There's a new younger band. I think they're from Melbourne. Surprise Chef, that's an instrumental band.
I don't know them. I'll have to check them out. Thanks.
They're starting to become pretty big. So yeah, I mean, there's lots of stuff coming out of Australia that I dig, but And then garage rock. I like Ty Segall and all these other bands that are probably a little bit younger than me or about my age. Outside of blues, I listen to a lot of that.
Too bright, so I say, who? No, no. So I say, who? So I say, who?
Tonight on Jump Children, we're talking with Matt Stubbs from GA20.
Could I ask you about the band now, GA20? Could you describe them to somebody who doesn't know them?
Yeah. So we're a trio. It's three of us. Myself, I'm Matt. Pat is a guitar singer. And then Tim plays drums. And we're basically, the band was formed to kind of basically write our interpretation of late 50s through maybe early 70s Chicago blues. We started the band for that. And I think, you know, it's kind of, we've been together for a few years now, and it starts to, things always grow if you're working on it. And, you know, we write some songs that might not be Chicago, 100% Chicago blues right now, but Chicago, a vintage Chicago blues band. I don't like to say vintage. I like to say timeless, a timeless Chicago blues band.
I'm interested to know how you came to choose the name. I don't know what a GA20 is, but how did you choose the name?
Well, I don't know if you've ever tried to name a band, but it's really hard. Every good name's been taken. So we were throwing around names, and we wanted a band name. We didn't want to use any of our own names. And at the time, I was using an old Gibson GA20 amp. I still use it in the recording studio and when we go on tour, and Pat has one now. And I don't know. It just seemed like when we looked at it, no one ever named their band after a GA20, and we were using one. So for lack of a more creative band name, we just called it GA20.
So how do you and Pat know each other? How did you get together?
So So I met Pat when I was living in Boston, Massachusetts. I don't live there anymore, but he still lives there. And I tour with a guy named Charlie Musselwhite. I play guitar with him, who's also a Chicago blues musician. And when I'm off the road, at the time anyway, I was doing lots of gigs just around Boston. I was living downtown, so if I was home, I like to play blues or play guitar in general. I like to drink beer, so if I'm home, I was just playing in bar rooms. And he started coming out. He saw the band, and at the time, he wasn't super schooled in blues. He liked it. He was really well studied in jazz, and then also very well studied in like heavy metal and hardcore music, which sounds interesting because it has nothing to do with what we're doing right now. But he does have a band that he still does that in. But he wanted to really study blues, so he happened to like the bands I was playing with, and he asked for some lessons at the time. And not that he needed guitar lessons, but it was more like he came over and I just introduced him to the blues musicians that I grew up on and the ones that spoke to me. And then from there, he kind of learned. And a couple years after that, Charlie Musselwhite did a record with Ben Harper, and he let the band know that he was going on tour for a year and we were going to be off. And that's my full-time job. That's how I paid bills and everything. So Pat and I were hanging out a lot, and we just kind of brainstormed an idea to put a little trio together to do gigs, to make some money and have fun and play blues. The idea wasn't to do where we're at now. It just happened, you know, the band did well and we recorded and we got a record label and stuff. But the idea was just to kind of play around town.
Okay, cool. Who does the writing?
Mostly me and Pat. Pat writes a lot of the lyrics, but the music, we both do that. And we both do a lot of the arranging. And then I do all the producing when we're in the studio. So it's a joint effort.
Do you guys have a process for songwriting?
A lot of people ask that. Every song's different. Sometimes Pat comes in, he's got like, you know, the lyrics done and a rough idea of the rhythm guitar part. And then I write the second part, you know, like the second guitar part, which might be a counter melody. Or a lot of times I'll just write a hook on guitar or a riff or a progression, and I send it to him. I'm like, here's what I wrote. I'm kind of thinking of these three references, whatever bands I was listening to or a mood or a vibe. And then he goes with it and he comes in and then we argue a bit. And then by the time we're done arguing, we kind of have something that someday might be a song we play.
Yes, I know you don't love me now, baby. And I know the reason why. Because you've got somebody now, baby. You treat me like a child. You say, see you in the... No, yeah, that's all. Either see me in the evening, or you don't see him at all. Yes, I got nobody now, baby. I'm sitting here all alone. I just wish you'd make up your mind. And baby, and come on home, boy, you'll see me in the... Oh yeah, that's all. Either see me in the evening, or you don't see me at all. Yes, I called my woman this morning. I called her on the phone. Cause somebody told me, look at here, man. Well, she's really not at home, boy. She'll see you in the... No, yeah, that's all. Either see you in the evening, or you don't see him at all. Yes, I love you, little old woman. I just can't help myself. No, I'm off the town for crazy little old girl. You're loving someone else, boy. I'll see you in the... Oh yeah, that's all. Either see me in the evening, or you don't see me at all.
this morning, I saw just before you go. She just really don't love you, boy. You find out while you gonna go. She'll say, see you in the evening. Oh yeah, that's all. Either see me in the evening, or you don't see me at all. Yes, goodbye, goodbye, little woman. That's all I've gotta say. I know you've got another man, baby. You treat me this way, boy. You'll see me in the. Well, oh yeah, that's all. Either see me in the evening, or you don't see him at all.
Tonight on Jump Children, we're talking with Matt Stubbs from GA20.
I'll move on to the recorded music, if you like. You guys have got three albums, as I understand. Well, I've got three of your albums, so if there's any more, let me know.
We have, we have one that's coming out. We have Lonely Soul, and then we put out an EP, so maybe that's where the live EP is. That's the other one. As of this Friday, all three of those will be out. Yep.
All right, cool. So I've got three albums in my hot little hands. GA20, yep. I don't know them. Where do I start? Which one's first, you reckon?
I would go in order, man. I would start with Lonely Soul. I mean, that was our first record. And then, you know, if you're digging that, the live one is you know, it was around the same time. It was just live performances we recorded. Unless you're really into Hound Dog Taylor and just dig right into that. You know what I mean? We didn't write the Hound Dog, obviously, music.
Yeah.
That's just our interpretation and our tribute to him. But, so I'd start with Lonely Soul.
The Hound Dog Taylor album, Try It, You Might Like It. How did you hook up with Alligator?
Well, so I've known Bruce, the owner of Alligator, or president, I don't know what his official term is, but I've known him for a long time because of playing with Charlie Musselwhite. Charlie's done records with him, and when we go through Chicago on tour, Bruce would come out, and we became friendly many years ago. And when GA20 was going through Chicago before the pandemic, he contacted me and wanted to come to the show. So he came out and he liked the band, and that was it. We shook hands, had a good time. And pandemic hit, you know, six, seven months later, probably. And I got an email from him. He really liked the band and he was interested in us doing a record with Alligator, but he didn't realize that we are already committed to our record label, which is Coal Mine Records or Karma Chief. They're the same, Coal Mine and Karma Chief. So I had to let him know. I'm like, well, I can't just go do a record with Alligator, but maybe we can work something out. And I knew it was the 50th anniversary this year for Hound Dog's first record and the birth of Alligator Records.
Yeah.
So I kind of put my little business cap on and pitched him an idea, and then pitched Terry Cole, the guy that owns Coal Mine, the idea of maybe both labels could work together in partnership and release this record together. It seems like it would make sense. You know, Alligator wanted us where we were really happy where we were, but I felt like we could reach more people and it was the anniversary. So, you know, we did a couple Zoom meetings and we figured out how it would work for everybody. And it seems like it was a good idea because everyone seems pretty happy so far.
I'm pretty happy. I love it. The songs you chose for the Hound Dog album, how did you choose them?
Really easy, man. I mean, we just, when we realized, once we knew we were going to do it and the labels got behind it, again, it was the height of the pandemic, but right now I'm sitting out on my little screened in porch. So Pat and Tim would come over once a week. We would talk, you know, text during the week, and we would all just pick out, like, I don't know, two songs each. And we would just come over here, set up the instruments with small amps because we're outside. And we would just jam on them and see which ones to us felt good and sounded good. But also, like, for me, I was producing it. The biggest thing I wanted, I didn't want to copy Hound Dog because we're not, you can never be another musician. You can only be yourself. But I wanted just to get the spirit of his records, especially those first two records. You know, I wanted to get the guitar tones and stuff in the ballpark. But the most important thing was the spirit. So we would just jam on songs. We had a couple, like 3 or 4 months before we scheduled the recording session, and once or twice a week we would just get together for a couple hours and we would just jam on them. And then we kind of had a long list of the ones that we thought would work, and then basically at the end I was one, like I said, producing it. I just kind of put them in order, and I was like, well, what would work in a sequence on a record if you put it on, because I like albums, you know. And we just decided and we picked 10. I'm like, well, let's do it. I hope they work out, because we're only going to record 10 and we need 10. So it worked out. About 4 o'clock.
away feeling bad. Wondering why that little girl lied to me. You drive away feeling bad, boy. Wondering why that little girl lied to me. She wanna try to get me in trouble. And why I just can't see.
Could you talk a little bit about recording the album? Because I read somewhere that you guys, along with what you're saying about recreating the spirit, but I read that you went out and hunted down similar equipment to what Hound Dog Taylor and the House Rockers used back in the 70s.
Yeah. Again, like, I wanted the spirit of it, but I think, you know, you still, like I said, I wanted the instruments at least to be in the ballpark sonically. I didn't want to use some crazy new modern guitar that would never get in that sonic space that Hound Dog did. So anyway, Hound Dog used these old Tysco vintage guitars. They weren't vintage back then, but they are now. I don't think they were called Tysco. I think they had a different name on them. I think that it was called a Kingston or a Kawai. And we were aware of those, but we didn't own any of those. And they're not very expensive now, still. But I emailed with Bruce because he produced those first two records and he had pictures. And I had a pretty good idea what they used. But there's not a ton of video of them playing live, especially not in the studio. So Bruce was cool, and he sent me back, you know, what he remembered, how he recalled it, like what instruments, what drum set, what amps, how they put the mics in the room, and then most importantly, like what was the vibe in the room, like what was it like, you know? So the first thing to do was to try to get some of these guitars. So Pat and I went and searched out four or five of them and bought four or five different models that were like all similar, or even I think one of them was the model. And when we would do those porch rehearsals, he'd bring them over, he'd set them up. And I even bought like similar amps. None of this stuff is very expensive. It's all like cheap old gear. And we just figured out, you know, which ones we put the record on. I'd listen, we'd record it a little bit on my laptop and listen back. And we settled, like, I think the week before we did the record, one more came in, and that was the one that it was the closest model of Hound Dog, and that's what we used. So between that and asking Bruce, like, just little subtle, you know, nerd music questions of like, what size were the drums, or the biggest thing I think to get the spirit of the record to be kind of in the ballpark was, he told me they basically just rolled in. They had monitors. They didn't use headphones. They were all in one room. They used the same gear they used at, you know, the bars where they played, and they basically just went in and played a bar set, like they were in like a juke joint or a bar or whatever, and it was loud and crazy and off the rails, and it was a great time. That's what I got from Bruce. I wasn't there, I wasn't born yet, but and so that's kind of what we did, with the exception of Pat wearing headphones so he could hear his voice a little bit better, because my studio is very small. We were like, all right, we're not gonna overthink it. We're gonna go in and just play the songs a few times, really loud and all in a room. Yeah.
So is it, in a sense, live? Did you overdub anything, or did you just pick the best one and put that on the album?
I think there might have been I don't think we overdubbed anything. No, I think everything was one or two takes. There might have been one song that was three takes or something. I don't know. We might have overdubbed, like, there might have been like one thing here or there where Pat, like, his voice cracked or something. He went in and just fixed one line on one song or two songs, but no, it's live. I mean, basically, when we play live, if you were to record it, it would be very similar. Yeah.
Matthew Stubbs, thank you very much.
All right. You have a good one, man.
You too, man. See ya.
Ciao.
you well.
Now that your head go bald.